I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. Happy spooky season, Highliners. The Rapids lost two home games to playoff teams last week and have some sadness maybe going into Decision Day 2024. R2 finished up their regular season, and the Potch era in the United States men's national team is upon us as Zach Steffen and the Gen Z Eagles are set to play Panama and Mexico during this international window. Joining me now, right after walking the dog, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Rabbi, how is our favorite Stout Street Bulldog supporter?
We failed to walk the dog. The dog is very specific about when and where and if he wants to go for a walk. And so we went out the front door and he tried to go to the side. Then we went out the back door and he looked down the alley in the dark and went, nuh-uh, not gonna do it. And then turned right around. He's kind of a scaredy dog. He's really funny that way. And he came in and had the zoomies, and Aster took care of it, my younger kid. And then, now we're down here podcasting in the Michael Azier Memorial Podcast Basement. So we're doing good. If you notice a warmer, buttery-er sound, I have these cool hexagonally shaped sound absorbing pads set up behind the setup today. So if my mic and my setup sounds a little bit better or a little bit more like Matt Pollard's, you know that it was because of this set of hexagonal little shapey sound absorby thingies that I bought. And if it sounds just the same, well, then I wasted $19.95. And that's the fun of having your own podcast. But yeah, Matt was like, ooh, they're cool shapes. And I was like, yeah, that's interesting. Matt's also decked out in Brooklyn Dodger gear. Both me and Matt are Dodger fans. Don't hate on us Rocky fans. I know you guys had a rough year. The Dodgers, I saw them win the World Series in 1988 as a kid. And then I unfortunately got to be around for the long, long ride afterwards. And the only time the Dodgers won the World Series since then was during the pandemic when none of us could really enjoy it. And they did it. I don't even remember who they beat, but they played in Texas, but they weren't playing the Rangers.
It was Tampa. Texas, right. was in the bubble, Mark. That was MLB's equivalent of the MLS back tournament. But it was the World Series.
I know, because it was the World Series. It was really weird. It was like, gift horses, mouths. We won the World Series. It was great. Like, I shouldn't feel bad, but like, it just, you know, it was actually really a height of COVID situation when the Dodgers won the World Series. So it doesn't, I don't know if you're like me, Matt. It doesn't feel like they won the World Series, but I don't know. You know, maybe next year when Shohei Ohtani is pitching, we'll see. But it's been a weird baseball season. I look forward to more of it. I'm also in silly season for me. It's not spooky season. It's crazy season. So if I can grind it out a couple more days, if I can make it to October 26th, then I've survived it. And at that point, I will turn into a toadstool and sleep for a month.
Yeah, I should point out, listeners, Mark is just coming off of his own international window as well with all of his busyness from being a professional Jew. And I've got a bit of a throat soreness thing, cough that I'm coming over. So hopefully, just like how Kevin Cabral and Cole Bassett will be playing slightly less hurt on decision day, Mark and I are not 100% right now. Also, Mark, did you just refer to Iggy as Aster?
No, my younger child has selected a new name and is going by he, him pronouns. So,
okay, hold on. Iggy's the older?
Yeah, Iggy's my older kid. You didn't know?
What? I thought he was the baby the whole time. I mixed up the, I can get the pronouns of your children correct, but I can't get what order they were born in correct. I need a spreadsheet for this, Mark. That's
really funny. I had no idea.
I have too many friends. I have too many friends having babies, and I can't keep track of how old they are or when they were born or what their names are or anything. Granted, most of them are babies, so prior to determining certain things about their personality or their gender identities. Mark, should we talk? Should we talk some USMNT?
That is super exciting because we have some news.
Yes. So I don't know. I think we podcasted and then it was the next day, Mark. In any case, listeners, it would have been the morning of the LA Galaxy game. I remember that now. Mauricio Pochettino released the first ever USMNT roster for an international window. He is coaching the team, and that included Colorado Rapids goalkeeper Zach Steffen, along with Columbus Crew's Patrick Schulte, Matt Turner, who is on loan and riding the bench at Bournemouth or Crystal Palace. I can't remember which. It's been a while since Matt Turner's played a game, Mark.
And I think it's Palace.
Palace. That
I'll look
sounds
it up.
Right.
Let's look it up so we can know. And why? Guess we have information.
And Ethan Horvath, who is who's starting in the Championship with Cardiff City. Mark, this was a pleasant surprise for me. I thought that
Palace.
Palace, thank you. I thought that Zach Steffen was deserving of a call up during that break that you had with the interim coach, and I didn't fully understand why he wasn't called up for that. If you weren't going to rotate stuff or give somebody new an opportunity, especially coming off of what Steffen had done, kind of building towards things in May and June, and then obviously doing what he did in the month of August for the Colorado Rapids in League Cup against Mexican opponents and really good MLS teams. In any case, and I think he's into the camp, and I think he's deserving, and I think he's on a good run of form, Mark. He and Patrick Schulte are the only two goalkeepers snorting right now and playing well. Ethan Horvath is playing for Cardiff City. They have not been good. It's kind of hard for him to play well as well. Matt Turner obviously not getting a lot of minutes in the Premiership for Crystal Palace, but Steffen playing well, good team. He's been a big part of the team's, recent success. Obviously not the last couple of weeks, Mark, but certainly the ascendancy of the Rapids in July and then what they did in League's Cup, and now clearly being a playoff team coming out of League's Cup. And Patrick Schulte, who's done really, really good stuff with Wilfred Nancy, won League's Cup, is going to be a top team and a contender as they look to defend their MLS Cup title. And Mark, all of this comes kind of in the context or the background maybe of Pochettino seeing Zach Steffen at Man City and seeing similarities in terms of style of play. And I was joking with Chris Sharpie at Burgundy Affair, Mark. I don't know if you're Greg Berhalter and Mauricio Pochettino texts you and says, "Hey, this is Poch. Can I talk to you about the player pool in terms of who I'm calling up?" Mark, are you, as the fired head coach, are you taking that call? If Mauricio Pochettino calls you and asks about what Zach Steffen's like when you coached him at Columbus Crew or coached him for the U.S. national team, are you taking that call, or are you saying, "F you, I'm taking the Chicago Fire job"?
Well, that's interesting. Well, congratulations to Greg Triple G Berhalter on the new job, and good luck to you. Hopefully you get some choice in who they sign, because, boy, the Fire have just made terrible choices for years. They've made some cool choices. I mean, Bastian Schweinsteiger, I thought that he would have been rad to be on the Colorado Rapids. He's like the German Jermaine Jones. Wow, that's a lot of G's in that sentence, speaking of Triple G. That was crazy. It's a lot of G's gone wild, as Vince Scully might say.
While we're fact-checking each other, Jermaine Jones, German-American, should point out.
Yes, and?
Okay, you said Bastian Schweinsteiger was the German Jermaine Jones. And
Jones is an American. He's red, white, and blue. He's star-spangled, baby.
I mean, yeah, he was capped for Germany at the youth level and then converted because, Jürgen Klinsmann was looking for mercenaries, but okay.
We are talking about many German players! Yes, no, it's true. But anyways, that is a good point. It's like, Bastian Schweinsteiger is the German Jermaine Jones. Like, somewhere Jermaine Jones is like, Ninist! Anyways, okay, moving on. I'll stop doing German impersonations before we lose listeners. Let me get to the core of the matter. Let's forget about whether Greg Berhalter takes the call. It's an interesting move. I'm not sure that I'm not so sure about Zach Steffen in the national team. Not in the sense that I think he's earned it because of experience and because he's had a fairly good run of form since he's been with the team. But I also think that the goalkeeper for Orlando City, the backup, No, not Orlando City. The starter for Inter Miami has been pretty
great
solid.
Great calendar.
Yeah, and I feel like going back to the well. Let me double check that. I think he's hurt though right now. And I think that's one of the reasons why he may not be available right now. But yeah, I think he's probably a better option overall for them. I don't know. It looks like he's healthy and he's just lost his starting place to Oscar Ustari at Inter. So that's kind of interesting. But anyways, yeah, I'm not sure it's a forward looking move. You know, we now have several goalkeepers who are on the roster who have been on the roster for a long time without demonstrating dominance or a clear vision that they are the obvious number one. I mean, Matt Turner was briefly the obvious number one a couple years ago, and he's kind of fallen out of favor because he's got buckets of rust hanging off of him. But we are way past the era when Tim Howard owns the position and everybody else slots in behind him. And I do think that a world where Zach Steffen shows up at camp because he's a veteran and he offers you sage wisdom in the locker room, but is going to be the second or the third choice, isn't a great option. I also think, like, you know, a USMNT that doesn't have a surefire guy between the pipes who will start all the games in a tournament, I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think you want to go into a tournament with two number ones or two guys who aren't nobody's quite sure. And I don't know that in the current lineup, Zach Steffen is the number one at any point. I think it's Schulte and Turner fighting it out. So I don't know, but I could be wrong. And, you know, I think for me, I guess I would like to see one of these four guys in the club situation be so dominant that everybody's like, yeah, he's our number one, obviously, because he's the starting goalkeeper for Man City or for PSG or for, you know, Miami or for any team. But like, we don't have that guy. We've got a guy who's having a great reclamation year in Colorado. We've got a guy who's having a great year in Columbus, but is kind of new and ascendant. And then we've got two other guys who've been around the USMNT for a long time. Anyways, I've said a lot of words. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it's the question I would have here, Mark, or the maybe two data points we'll get in terms of the two games, who starts them. How does Poch want to play? How similar are we? I think there's a lot of people just seeing the way that they were fun at Spurs but couldn't get over the line. And then is that what we see from a U.S. standpoint? Are they slightly a little bit more pragmatic? Are they slightly a little bit more dominant, like how Poch was with PSG, albeit with better players relative to his competition? You know, when it comes to Mauricio Pochettino, will be judged on what we do getting out of the group in two summers and then what we do in the knockout games, presumably against teams that on paper are as good or slightly better than the United States as well. And so the big argument you had, Mark, going back to 2022, leading into the 2022 World Cup, was Zach Steffen was better with his feet. Matt Turner was the better shot stopper, and both of them had some variability in terms of their club situation. You know, Zach was going out on loan to a few different places because he was starting at Manchester City, and that's something that Greg valued a little bit. But also, Berhalter knew Zach from their time in Columbus together, and then Matt Turner was kind of a shot stopper who got better at the playing out of the backside. So I would say Horvath and Turner are very, very close to each other in that they are firstly shot stoppers who've had to incorporate the possession component into their games. I'd say Turner a little bit more given the club teams that he's been on. Ethan Horvath and Cardiff City, not exactly playing aesthetically pleasing soccer all of the time. And Schulte with what Columbus Crew want to do, and then Colorado Rapids with what Zach Steffen and Matt Turner, and Chris Armas are trying to do, are very much the play with the feet, but then also be a good shot stopper. And so I think that's a question we're not going to know until we actually see how they play against Panama and then what they do in Guadalajara vis-a-vis El Tri. The other thing that I will point out as well, Mark, because every single time I've posted about this on Burgundy Wave or on HTHL since the roster got announced, there is a rando anonymous USMNT account pointing out Zach Steffen, either the fact that he plays in MLS, the fact that he's a quote washed European player coming back to MLS. Apparently, Georgi Mihailovic, Cole Bassett, and Sam Vines are also washed. I guess Tim Ream's also washed as well, Mark, since he's not with Fulham anymore. He could have gone to another Premier League or certainly a championship team if he wanted to. And also pointing out the post-shot XG mark, which is something you and I have had a discussion about. I had a really good conversation with Jeremiah Oshan from Sounder at Heart before the game against Seattle. I will put a link to that podcast in the show notes, listeners, where we kind of broke that down. And I kind of summed it up to Zach was coming off of his major knee injury, didn't have a great start to the season. The team as a whole took 10 games to figure itself out. And then things started to get better, but also nobody's keeping clean sheets in MLS. And there's plenty of games, and I realize I'm acknowledging this is an eye test as opposed to the stat of, Mark, how many games have we seen in the last 2-3 months where Zach Steffen bails out his defense, or he has a really, you would say in terms of the number of saves and periods in which the Rapids are under the cosh, Steffen stands on his head and keeps the team from conceding a goal. And in that game, the Rapids end up doing something, getting a result out of that game, but Zach Steffen does not keep a clean sheet. So numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the full story. And so I think post-shot XG is a flawed or at least an incomplete statistic in that regard. There are other things that you could be we could be looking at that we don't have good analytics for because of the way that soccer is. And if you look at it, Steffen's post-shot XG, like cumulatively in terms of the negative numbers, has been relatively consistent throughout this season. Now, albeit with those numbers that we're getting from FBRF, I should point out for the most part are exclusively MLS numbers. So we don't have the League's Cup numbers, which would, which is doing him a disservice. But I would almost, if we're chunking the season into quartiles, first 10 games, he's hurt, new team, bunch of new players, they're freaking out. Second, it starts to gradually get better. They're doing a better job of winning games in which they concede goals. They're still not doing a great job of that. League's Cup, fantastic. End of MLS play, fantastic as well. And then even in this recent run where he has conceded goals and the team has been losing games, he's done a really, really good job. It could have been 2-3-0 in the first 20 minutes at Minnesota. They only lose 3-0. I don't know that anyone is exclusively blaming Zach Steffen for those three goals conceded. Those were three really open looks that the Rapids gave up to LA Galaxy. You know, maybe if you want to nitpick here, you know, Steffen maybe puts the rebound from the Jordan Morris shot away from Albert Rusnak, but there's plenty of other people to give blame around to that. And that's not necessarily reflected in that number, to where if you're just looking at the stats rather than watching the games, you're not necessarily seeing the whole thing. So yeah, that's my thought, and maybe that's something Pochettino's seeing.
Say that, like, the three best American goalkeepers in MLS for post shot expected goals right now are surprising, and Zach Steffen is still on the bottom of the league, but that's because he had a rough start at the beginning of the season, I think. Yes. And has probably been mostly neutral since then, but he hasn't caught up. But the three best American goalkeepers by post shot XG in MLS this season: Brad Stuver, Steve Clark, and Matt Fries. Steve Clark, by the way, is 40 million years old. He actually remembers when the dinosaurs crawled through the... No, he's not. But
to your point, Mark, about how the stat is incomplete, or maybe we don't fully understand it. Like, the in what world is Steve Clark getting called in to this camp right now? I think Matt Fries is a great young goalkeeper. I might vote for him.
I really like Brad Stuver. I've always liked Brad Stuver, by the way. But and I do think that this is a really interesting that it points out that both Matt Fries and then the next goalkeeper down from there is John McCarthy. And they're all ahead of Drake Callender, and the next guy down is Brad Guzan, followed by Patrick Schulte. So you've got, statistically speaking, you've got three former USMNT goalkeepers, or recent USMNT goalkeepers, in Callender, Guzan, and Schulte. And then you've got four Americans above them, Stuver, Clark, Fries, and McCarthy. So you can't just use that number, right? It doesn't tell you everything. But that being said, I do put a lot of stock in that number, and I'm okay with admitting that I'm a data freak, and but I'm also, you know, like, I think you and I have both just noted that, like, Zach Steffen has been really good for 15 games. The other thing that's really interesting is Zach Steffen absolutely stood on his head in League's Cup, and none of those numbers count. And that's really difficult. And that's, by the way, one of my annoyances with League's Cup. Which is, like, statistically, and Americans like stats more than like Europeans and Brits, because if you go to England and you try and look up stats for players, it's super hard to understand because they play in, you know, Champions League, and they play in Europa League, and they play in the Cuppity Cup Cup, and they play in the
other Cuppity Cup Cup.
No, the main Cuppity Cup Cup. What's the main Cuppity Cup?
FA Cup.
The FA Cup, right? Like, and you don't know whether to count those stats because, like, how do you count their 15-0 blowout over Stevenage? You know, like, well, what does that mean for the stats? So this is one of those problems, but it's really a problem with League's Cup because I think we acknowledge that the Mexican teams are as good or maybe better than the MLS teams, but the stats don't get calculated or computed in any way. So we don't really know. And we don't know whether this tournament's going to be around in 2 years. So we don't really know how to kind of calibrate it. So anyways, that's just a rant. That has nothing to do with the topic. But
yeah, so we'll see what happens, Mark. I think Zach Steffen's deserving and really excited to see that the Colorado Rapids, you know, have a U.S. 17er back on their team, certainly. So we'll see what happens. Mark, shall we transition to actually discussing some soccer?
Yeah, but there hasn't been a lot and there won't be a lot, but that's okay. Well, let's talk about it.
Listeners, this past Wednesday, Colorado Rapids played LA Galaxy and they took the lead late in the first half, and then they gave up 3 goals on really good counterattack opportunities in the second half, and they lost by a score of 3-1. Georgi Mihailovic was in for this game, Mark. Cole Bassett, who was rumored to be out still with that quad injury for precautionary reasons, did not play in either of the games this past weekend. Calvin Harris, Omer Fernandez on the wing, Connor Ronan, the goal scorer, and Oliver Larraz were in the double pivot, and Reggie Cannon, I think it's his first start at home, Mark. It's the first time I'd seen him play in person, obviously, because I missed the Portland game. So he was on the right for Keegan Rosenberry, Jackson Travis on the left for the Rapids. And Colorado, Mark, for money, was the better team in the first half. And they created a bunch of really good half chances. And they tried to get the ball to Hoffa and a Georgie. And Calvin Harris was cooking as well. And lo and behold, it's Connor Ronan cutting inside of the top corner of the box, going far bottom corner on a rope to score his first goal from the run of play this season to give the Rapids the lead. And Mark, I thought it was even in terms of the Rapids had a lot of possession, had a lot of half chances in the second half. The Galaxy did stuff in transition, had number of chances, but had higher quality ones, and they ultimately ended up scoring. And the game flipped, unfortunately, relatively early on in the second half. Gabriel Peck scoring in the 50th minute, drifting off the back shoulder of Andreas Maxu, and I think mishitting the ball and somehow finding the back corner of the net rather than finding Joseph Paintsill for a tap-in. And then it was Ricky Pooch doing what Ricky Pooch does. Colorado tries to respond. I thought the energy could have been a little bit better after that, Mark, or at least the urgency immediately after giving up the lead, knowing you needed something from this game. And they're pushing. And then 1 minute into stoppage time, they give up the ball and Ricky Pooch scores to put the game away, in which Colorado could very well have gone down and made it 2-2. Mark, I'm going to have some similar thoughts in many ways to both of these games, but where do you want to start with this loss to the G's?
Well, first off, that Connor Ronan goal was shades of Brian Galvan. Galvan was a player who really liked to be on the right side and use his left foot to kind of like go far post at a cool angle with maybe a little bit of hook. He usually liked to go top, but I miss that guy. He was fun. When he was in his prime before he hurt himself, there was so much potential there. But anyways, I also, you know, we don't see a lot of goals from both of our regular D-mids, Ali Larraz and Connor Ronan, so that was great. I really thought this game was inevitable, like Thanos in a respect. It was just very LA Galaxy controlling the tempo, moving the ball around. LA has always done a really good job of knifing through the middle with forward-looking 25-yard passes. I mean, they were doing that like 5 years ago when they were bad. Like they've always been kind of like a chaos FC, in that they generate trouble for opposing teams, but they don't do it methodically. And like Sporting Kansas City are going to break you down through possession and drive you mad, and then after controlling the ball for 4 straight minutes, score a goal because they've, you know, moved you around 7 million times and you just got tired and dizzy and gave it up. LA Galaxy are going to rifle through you like a bad burrito through your digestive tract. And that's how that is not a Southern California-ism or anything like that. But anyways, I just felt like there's an unbeatability to LA Galaxy this year that I feel that far exceeds every other team in the Western Conference, right? And it's interesting that you said, I think I'm going to say a lot of the same things about the Galaxy that I do about Seattle. Like, I would say right now, if the LA Galaxy continue playing the way that I think they've been playing since July, they're unbeatable and they're winning MLS Cup, period. Point blank, nothing. Like, the back line is solid. The offense is clicking on all cylinders. I would love to see an LA Galaxy Inter Miami final. That would blow my mind. I would watch the heck out of that. Although honestly, a Galaxy Columbus final would also be totally rad, and I would be so down for that too. But that's I think where I'm at, which is like, for me, this is a great game because it means you've got really good tape going into the playoffs. If you play the Galaxy, where you can really take this game and the other games they played and tear them apart and break them down and say, what do we want to do differently here? How do we stop this team? Can they be stopped? It's a good question.
Yeah, no, to your point, Mark, looking at this from an LA Galaxy perspective, apparently one of their memes recently that they started, because you'll remember Ricky Pooge was hurt for this reverse fixture in July before the Rocky Mountain Cup game. And so the Galaxy had to try and figure stuff out without doing just pretty stuff in the midfield through Pooge. And apparently their transition play was a really big deal just with the way that their wingers played, Mark. And so the meme that became a thing for them was that they respond once they concede a goal. Like the Galaxy are comeback kings in ways that Colorado maybe at times this year has kind of given up that second goal and hasn't been able to claw their way back into the game, and the scoreline's not super flattering at the full-time whistle. So I saw plenty of Galaxy accounts on the Wednesday posting that, you know, the video that shows the lineup of the Spanish national team at the 2010 World Cup, and you know, it's like it's just like legend after legend. Like Busquets is in there, Sergio Ramos, Puyol, Gerard Piqué, like those ones and everything. Like you've absolutely seen this meme before, Mark. And so I saw like four Galaxy accounts that were all posting like the LA Galaxy after they concede a goal in the first half. And so maybe on some level that was part, I wouldn't say that's part of the strategy, because you know, Greg Vandy's not going in there saying, hey guys, let's play this first half so that we're down 1-0. But yeah, like I think it's worth pointing out, as you said, Mark, I think the Galaxy are absolutely the best team in the Western Conference this year. I think it's probably a coin flip between them and LAFC in an El Tráfico conference final. LAFC have probably had a little bit of a hangover coming off of League's Cup and then playing in the Open Cup final as well. They won one of those, they lost one of those, but you know, they haven't been as great in league play since those two competitions finished, certainly. And LA Galaxy have been on an upward trajectory. They had to figure stuff out while Pooge was out. Pooge came back, they got better, and then they've compounded that as well. And they played, this is what they're good at. This is what they're elite at. This is as good as Inter Miami is when they've just got all the Barcelona guys, and while half of them can't move anymore, you can't get the ball off of them, and Messi needs half a foot of space, and Busquets needs a foot of space, and Jordi Alba needs 2 feet of space, and they'll tear you apart in, you know, 24 passes. So there's no shame in terms of the loss itself in that regard. But yeah, like to your point, this has been a bit of a trend. There were transition plays for Minnesota. There were transition plays for this morning, Kansas City. Hopefully now they've gotten some film to maybe better understand what isn't working there. I have to wonder, Mark, just with how quick some of those plays have happened, you know, if you have Moise Bombito in there instead of Lawless Abubakar, with all due respect to Lawless and his speed, are we talking about some of these plays certainly a little bit differently? But I think that's the targeted weakness for the Colorado Rapids, or that's the thing that they're willing to risk because of how they want to play at home, particularly when they are chasing the game to try and win the game and put pressure on the opponent. And there's some really elite teams with really good footballers with really good ball skills that they can tear you apart if you try to play that way against them in three or four moments where it matters. And the Galaxy had three of those opportunities in the second half, and they scored on all three of them. Mark, I'll ask this question to you because I think it does lead into what happened on Saturday against Seattle. How much concern are we about fatigue here? Jason Maxwell, friend of the show, View of the Couch, had a really good point, Mark, coming out of the Minnesota game, just commenting how many players had played over 2,500 minutes and then a bunch who had played over 3,000. Because you look at it, I think Andreas Maxu has played over 3,000 minutes. Stefan obviously has played every single minute of first team play in the goalkeeper position. Cole Bassett as well prior to this injury. If we count the Olympic minutes for Georgi Mihailovic, he's now over 3,000 minutes. So yes, there's 14, 15 guys who've been getting minutes, but you know, that's including Mike Edwards, who's gotten like 200. That's including Sebastian Anderson, who's played maybe 500. That includes Jackson Travis, who the only minutes he's really gotten has been when Sam Vines is hurt rather than them going back and forth. You know, if Reggie Cannon was signed in January, then would Keegan Rosenberry be at like 2,200 and would Reggie Cannon be at like 1,000? Mark is doing this weird, he's like shaking his head, but also doing a neck exercise. I don't know if it's like an old thing. Okay, so Mark, your thoughts on potential fatigue for the team, whether or not the Rapids are currently paying the price for their long Leagues Cup run, and whether or not this is a factor that could affect them in the playoffs, given the international break to get right before decision day.
I am only worried about the fatigue of two players. Everybody else is fine. And the other thing is, everybody in the league has played a really long season. It's not like the Rapids have played more or less than everybody else. Goalkeeper fatigue is not a thing. They stand there. They don't have to. The only thing you have to worry about with goalkeepers is that they got injured at some point, which, you know, as far as I know, Zach Steffen has been healthy as a horse all season. So that's
other than the knee to the face the other night.
Oh, that's right.
It was from Gabriel Peck, where he was scrambling for the ball, Mark, and he doesn't collect it. So then Peck goes in for it. So then Steffen gets it and he takes a knee kind of the eye. It looked not great at training on Friday. It looks okay now. Obviously, he played on Saturday. But I should point out, Mark, per the way that Pro was refereeing that 2 years ago, that was a red card. And that was nice. A foul. That was endangering the safety of Zach Steffen, if you ask
me. I'm genuinely worried about a Cole Bassett-less Rapids. I just don't think they look the same. I think that I think the interesting thing also was that, as we saw during Leagues Cup, a Mihailovic-less Cole Bassett is one-dimensional, and a Bassett-less Mihailovic is one-dimensional. Like, and I would not have seen that. I think at the beginning of the season, I thought that they were going to play the same position, or that, based on experience, that Bassett was going to get pushed out to the left like he had two seasons ago, where he wasn't particularly effective as a winger. And we used to complain, Matt, I don't know if you remember, we used to complain all the time that Robin Fraser wasn't letting Cole Bassett play the same position 2 weeks in a row, and it was messing with the kid's head, and I didn't like it, and I was mad at Robin, but I wouldn't tell Robin that because me and him don't chat on a regular basis like me and you do. That's my biggest worry, that if Mihailovic doesn't get enough rest, or if he's not 100%, or if Bassett isn't ready to go, that they're not ready for the playoffs. Those are the only two players. Everybody else I have no concerns about whatsoever. You ran down all the wingers, you ran down all the center backs. Remember, Lalas Abubakar didn't play most of the season because he was a backup to Moise Bombito. And Moise is off in France having fun and eating beignets and going, oh, ho, ho, ho. That's not true. But anyways, I'm very punchy tonight. This is what happens when we record the show before my bedtime instead of after my bedtime. So that's where I'm at. I generally am. I'm not that concerned, but what I'm really concerned with, and I threw this out on Twitter, is a Colorado Rapids that have lost a couple games, got no points, and fell behind in the table this week. The Rapids started the week in third, and they're currently in sixth. And being having that home field advantage for a best of three series is a very big deal. So it would be really good if the Rapids could climb back into fourth. Matt's shaking his head. We're having a lot of head shaking today, which means I don't think it's possible, right?
No, they can finish.
It's mathematically impossible.
Correct.
Oh, they can't finish any higher than what?
They can finish. They can jump Houston and finish in fifth, Mark. And still, yeah. We'll get to this in a minute, listeners. There.
Oh, good. I ruined it.
The Rapids can finish eighth as well, but we'll have some info on that over the weekend that could make that no longer a possibility. But yes, the Colorado Rapids will have a home playoff game in the MLS Cup playoffs. That will either be the wild card game if they finish eighth, and if not, it will be the second leg of the best of three round of 16 series. I was just providing the details there, Mark.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Do you have anything else to say?
No, I'm fine. Let's move on to Seattle.
Okay. I guess I will
dead air.
I'm a little bit concerned about fatigue, Mark. That being said, I think the international window is perfectly timed. We spoke to Chris Armas on Friday. I should point out, listeners, Mark, I don't know if you saw the post-game press conference that we had with Coach after the Wednesday game. I asked a question, and Rapids manager Chris Armas had a disagreement, and then we had a little bit of a back and forth. This happens sometimes. It happened probably 5 to 7 times with Robin Fraser. It happened at least once with Pablo, and 2 times with Anthony Hudson. But I should say Chris and I have had very good conversations after Friday training, after the game on Saturday, and then I even chatted for him for a little bit on Monday for a Burgundy affair. So I realized most the people who haven't heard this or who haven't seen that interaction, that post-game press conference, are probably wondering, like, what's going on right now? And I'm here to tell you right now, there's nothing going on anymore. It's good. We squashed whatever beef was there. We squashed it. Yeah, we were all good. He and I had a moment. That happens. I have a joke that I say to every single new member of No One Good FC, that if you go a full year without a player or coach like vehemently disagreeing with you on a question and just, like, you know, and then ripping you a new one, like, you're almost not doing your job from a media standpoint. And Chris and I had a bad night on Wednesday, and that's okay. And we're good now. And to those of you who already know what I'm talking about, you've already formulated your opinions, and I don't need to say anything more about it because you've already made up your mind and you're astute and well informed as Highliners and already are aware of what media availability can look like. Mark, we will move on to the Seattle game. So the point I was going to make about fatigue, Mark, is that it was a concern for me going into Seattle. It's a concern generally now. The international break comes at a good time because I think the players need some time off. And we spoke with Chris on Friday, and he said Kolbasic was probably a week away. And he said that Kevin Cabral, who practiced fully, was a few weeks away. So I have to assume that means that Kolbasic is probable for being available for decision day a week from the Saturday against Austin FC, and at worst, Kevin Cabral is back that following week. If we look at it, listeners, there's a rough schedule out for when that best of three series is going to be. So decision day is on Saturday, October 19th. The wild card games will be the midweek, either Wednesday the 23rd or Thursday the 24th of September. And then, according to MLSoccer.com, they have the window for the best of three is between Friday, October 25th, and Sunday, November 10th. So first of all, Mark, we have a possibility for MLS Halloween, which I think would be absolutely fun. But also, that also means that it's 3 weekends, listeners. So it's the weekend of the 26th, the weekend of the 2nd, the weekend of the 9th. So I don't know that that best of three series is going to be a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, or a Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, 3-game week as well. So Mark, that means that's an extra week away if the Rapids don't play in the wild card game. So 3 weeks for Kevin Cabral to get back. And then even if he's not able to go in that first leg as well, he probably has another week to get the elbow right for the home game, which I presume would be somewhere between the Friday and the Sunday, November 1st, 2nd, 3rd.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, a healthy Cabral would be nice. I always worry about rust. You know, it's been a while since he played, so, but we'll see.
So 2 weeks off, Mark, is really, really good going into decision day, potentially then having a full week going into the best of three games, and then having 1 week in between those games as well helps the Rapids catch up maybe from a fatigue standpoint, or at the very least doesn't make it any worse than their schedule already was, given they were playing every 4 or 5 days in League Cup. So that is a potential solution, or at least something that every single team is going to have to deal with that. I think because of the Rapid situation, it helps them more than it would other teams that did not make a Leagues Cup run or have some other fixture congestion in the month of September and into October. Listeners, this past Saturday, it was fan appreciation night. There were $3 pretzels. They were delicious. And the Colorado Rapids lost 1-0 to the Seattle Sounders. Another game where I thought Colorado controlled play for large stretches. They tried to do some stuff in possession. A road Seattle Sounders team under Brian Smetzer, understandably, was very compact, very hard to break down. And really, the two teams for me on the night were at their best, either playing in transition or off of set pieces. Jordy Mihailovic had some good balls into the box that players couldn't necessarily connect with. I thought the youngster, Mark, the winger, Rothrock or Rock.
Yeah.
I think it's Rothrock.
No, it's not, Rothrock. You got
it's
it.
It's Rothrock.
That kid can ball. He's pretty good.
Patrick? Peter?
Paul. I think it's Patrick.
Paul Rothrock. I apologize Rothrock. For getting your name
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, it's a really funny thing. He's this like very generic sounding American dude who just kind of came on the scene. I mean, I like blinked. I think we previewed him. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I think I watched him in a couple minutes a couple weeks ago. But like, this guy came out of nowhere, kind of a rookie phenom. It's a good story. I look forward to kind of watching his career and hoping he continues to do things.
In any case, he played out wide and he skinned Keegan Rosenberry on a couple of plays. And I would argue, Mark, he was the most dynamic player that Seattle had in the first half. More important than Albert Rusnak, more important than Pedro de la Vega or Jordan Morris. The Rapids get a couple chances. Stephen Fry does his thing. Most of these shots, a lot of them were directly at them. And Colorado only gave up two shots on goal the whole night. Unfortunately, one of those came in the third minute of the second half as there was a turnover at midfield, kind of a miscommunication, funky situation between Captain Keegan and Oliver Larraz. Ball gets turned over. Jonathan Lewis, Jordan Morris gets in behind as well. He gets a shot. Stefan makes a really, really great save. 1v1. The rebound falls to Albert Rusnak. Rusnak tries to get it past Maxu, and Maxu directs it into the bottom corner. You know, Mark, he gets 2 or 3 degrees, maybe different angle on getting a touch to that shot from Rusnak, the former RSL player, and that probably goes off the post or on the other side of the post. And that was the only goal in the game. Colorado pushed, tried to get something. Big chances for Ollie Larraz had one. Calvin Harris had one as well. Mark, for as much as we just talked about how this team was missing Kevin Cabral, I thought in moments where there was space, I thought Jonathan Lewis did as much as he could to try and challenge the outside backs for Seattle and try and cook as well. And I thought he did a good job creating. Jordy didn't get enough touches on the ball, unlike the Galaxy game, if you ask me. And Hoffa didn't get enough open looks, and the ones that he did get that were kind of half chances, he either put wide or were at Stephen Fry. Mark, this is a game of a Rapids team that I think was certainly desperate. As I mentioned, was maybe a little bit tired, was missing two really important players, Cole Bassett, Kevin Cabral, from their team, and playing a Sounders team that does not mind being extremely pragmatic, taking their chances when they can, and getting a goal and just winning a game like that. Brian Smetzer has had this exact result probably 15, 20 times in his tenure with Seattle Sounders, and it is why, in spite of the fact that Seattle's maybe lower in the table this year and they've had a little bit of rotation out with some of those older players as well, like the Sounders are still the Sounders, Mark, and I refuse to say that this era of them is dead or that they are not a threat to potentially win MLS Cup until Christian Roldan, Jordan Morris, and Brian Smetzer are no longer with the organization. And unfortunately, just like, you know, teams are going to have nights like that against them. It was disappointing. There were things the Rapids could have done better, you know, but it was certainly an improved performance and an improved 90 minutes compared to the Galaxy game. LA Galaxy, it was a good first half and then a gradually regressive second half. I thought on the whole of the 90 minutes, it was balanced and the Rapids controlled the play. But as, you know, I almost have a mantra or a red-ism going back a couple of years on this pod, Mark, of the XG argument. Would you rather have a bunch of half chances, a bunch of low quality opportunities, or would you rather have a small number of really, really good looks at goal? And that's what Seattle went with, and Jordan Morris could have scored, and lo and behold, it was Albert Rusnak. Rabbi, your thoughts?
The Rapids looked a little tired. Some of those like really pretty four player combinations that they use to kind of like burst into the final third. And they've done that throughout the last part of the season, especially during Leagues Cup. They would make these really nice little ticky tacky attacking moves into the box, and they would redirect it to a player that I didn't expect that they would go to. That happened like once. It was like their best attack, and that was it. There wasn't that much else. The stats really tell a big story here also. The Rapids had zero big chances. Seattle had three. The Rapids had 0.93 expected goals. Seattle had 1.73. The best Rapids chance on goal was a Rafa Navajo 0.07 expected goals. Seattle had two Albert Rusnak's 0.15s, which is pretty good. And then a big miss on an open drive by Jordan Morris, which I think was good for 0.56 expected goals.
Yeah.
0.56 expected goals is basically like, that was a gimme. You should have made that. So you don't see numbers that high very often. So to be honest, the game, you know, the numbers also say this, and even the eye says this to me, wasn't that close. Seattle kind of dominated this game, which wasn't super fun. And then one set of numbers, I knew all those numbers the night of the game. There's one set of numbers I didn't really realize, which is kind of damning, and is uncommon, and that I haven't seen it much this year from the Rapids. Seattle won duels, ground duels, area duels, and successful dribbles. Not by a little, by a lot. Like 59% to 41% on duels, 61% to 39% on ground duels. Aerial duels was 9-8, so it's a lot closer. Successful dribbles, 14-6, right? You know, I always think of a successful dribble as getting put to the sword, right? Like one-on-one, a player looks down on another player and he just skins him. And getting skinned, you know, like 3-4 times more than the other guy, that's fine. Getting skinned 14-6, yikes, you do not want to do that, especially at altitude at home. So I have worries. I think the biggest thing out of this game for me was kind of like asking the question. I think the Rapids have lost three out of four or four out of five, something like that.
Three in a row and four out of five. The one win mark.
See, I know what I'm talking about. Even when I make stuff up, I know what I'm talking about.
The one win was against Toronto, who rotated their squad, given that they had the Canadian Cup final midweek as well. And I should point out, Mark, three straight losses to three straight playoff teams. So, you know, these are the types of teams that the Rapids are going to need to go on the road and get a draw in that first leg, and, you know, must win situation in that second leg. And they had two, albeit really good, really veteran, been here, done that, more than the Rapids teams in Seattle and LA, who came in and won that game.
My only other worry through this whole series, I've been thinking about this a lot, I don't think I've said it out loud, I think I may have said it in the first game, is that our defensive midfield doesn't look like they're in position to make a play in the final third on any of the goals that have been scored over this run. And that's kind of concerning. Like, I think we are quick to blame the back line for failures. I've looked at the back line in almost all of these lost games, and I've always thought to myself, like, they're all pretty much where they're supposed to be. I mean, maybe Lalas Abubakar isn't quite as fast as he should be, but, like, he's a center back. The reality there is that somebody should have got there to cut off that angle before he's the last man standing. So I don't know. That's a little bit of a worry, too, that, like, I'm not sure quite why the D-mids are getting pulled out of position to the degree they are. But, I'm still in a don't panic mode. I think this team will win at Austin. We're not going to talk about it yet because it's too far off. I think that we'll preview the playoff opponent, and I will be hopeful about it. But I am a little concerned that we're falling flat at the wrong time of year, and you would rather be kind of falling flat at the beginning of the year and rounding into form at this time of year. Seattle was a hot mess at the beginning of the year, and now they look okay. And I would really prefer that it was going the other way around, where the Rapids were a hot mess at the beginning of the season, and now they look okay. And Seattle were having, by the way, you and I, and for those of you who haven't listened to this podcast a lot, we've talked about this for many, many years now. Seattle seems to not care about the entire first half of the season. They just roll into the second half and do stuff, and it's really annoying, right? Like, they only had one year, was it last year or the year before that, where they were a train wreck, and they never got it together.
It was 2 years ago, Mark, and it was completely understandable because they won Ponca Champions. So,
oh yeah, that was a crazy year. Yeah, that was such a crazy year.
And I think that's the only time the Seattle Sounders have ever missed the playoffs, or it broke a long playoff appearance.
Yeah, I don't think they made it to the playoffs their first or to second year in the league, but I don't want to look it up. And I'm not, that's not because I'm lazy. Highline fans. That's because we don't like the Seattle Sounders enough to honor them, to look up stats about them. We just want to move on and ignore them.
So regardless, Mark, I think it's completely valid for Rapids fans to be concerned going into decision day, or concerned that this team is going to continue to slip down and be a lower seed and thus have to play a higher seeded team, potentially get roped into the wild card game as well. And I can completely understand the Rapids fan who, after last week, is concerned that this team's heading towards a first round exit. I have been accused, Mark, of being negative all season long in terms of my coverage of the team. So let's end this review of the double game loss, or double week loss, double loss week, DLW. Let's recap that with, I think, some positive perspective. You know, number one, Mark, I think we both barely had the Rapids making the playoffs. And even then, that was us being a little bit optimistic. There were plenty of pundits locally, nationally, who thought that this team was going to be in the bottom third of the Western Conference. Like we said at the beginning of the season, Mark, honestly, like a playoff appearance and winning the Rocky Mountain Cup would have been seen as success. An absolute huge success would have been Rocky Mountain Cup, overall balance, regular season, a cup run. Granted, that's before we knew that Open Cup wasn't going to be a thing, so it was going to have to be in Leagues Cup. It happened in Leagues Cup. They qualified for Champions Cup. Hooray. That is a success. That's a positive. And get a home playoff game and advance in one playoff round. And now, if nothing else, Mark, like we can check that off. Good regular season. Check. Raise the floor. Check. Re-engage with the community and the fan base and show some emotional connection, some sense that you care, and some sense that you hear and put intention towards the grievances from the fan protests from last year. Check. Rocky Mountain Cup. Check. Cup run, winning and cup run and qualifying for Champions Cup. Check. Getting a home playoff game no matter what. Check. And the only other thing, Mark, that we could have said that would have been the icing on this proverbial cake of the Rapids returning to relevancy and quality, or at least being mid in the MLS Western Conference, was advancing in a playoff round, something the team has not done since 2016. And realistically, even though they're only going to get one home playoff game instead of potentially three in that first round, they're two wins away from that happening. And so, Mark, even if the Rapids were to lose on decision day, and even if they were to drop further down in the standings and be a first round exit whenever it is they enter, whether they're wild card or the best of three round as well, this season is still, at this point, already been a success. And Rapids fans should look back on in 2 months' time, in 6 months' time, in a year, in several years, look back on 2024, and their first reaction should absolutely be joy, not frustration in the end of it, but rather the joy of the journey and all of the good things that happened, even if the playoffs end in disappointment. Which, by the way, listeners, the playoffs end in disappointment for everybody but the team that wins MLS Cup. So, okay. Mark, let's talk about, we won't do a whole rundown, listeners, of playoff seedings and potential scenarios there. The reason for that is mostly because there's some makeup games to be had. So this weekend, and I will look up what day, it's Saturday or Sunday, and I can't remember which, on Sunday, October 13th at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Time, Vancouver Whitecaps will be hosting LAFC. I believe this is a rescheduled game because LAFC played in the Leagues Cup final. And so LAFC is playing Vancouver. So Vancouver has one game in hand right now on the Rapids. And that result could affect the seeding scenarios there. And so obviously by the time we pod next week, we'll know the results of that game. So then we'll go over the scenarios for that. But in short, if you've got nothing to do on Sunday and you want to watch this game, you are rooting for LAFC to win because the Rapids can't already catch LAFC, and a Vancouver loss prevents them from catching the Rapids in any way, any scenario. Worth pointing out, LAFC has been Vancouver's Achilles heel recently. LAFC eliminated Vancouver in the playoffs last year, and Vancouver did not have a good week either. They got spanked 3-0 by the Sounders, and then they lost their game on Saturday as well. So by the transitive property, the Rapids lose a close game that could have gone either way, 1-0 to Seattle. Vancouver loses 3-0 and does not look competitive in any way, shape, or form. We have a sense that the Rapids are on better form right now than the Vancouver Whitecaps. So we're looking at that. But Mark, there's still so much uncertainty in terms of the seeding for the other teams that not only are we unsure if the Rapids are going to finish between fifth and eighth in the Western Conference, but Mark, there's also There's uncertainty in terms of who's finishing second, third, and fourth. LAFC are on 58 points. They do have that game in hand compared to everybody else. And then Seattle and RSL are both on 56 points, 2 points behind RSL with a game remaining. So, Mark, your thoughts. Who do you want to see in the first round? Who are you rooting for? Are there matchups that you like? Or at the very least, is there one that you hate the least?
All right. So if the playoffs happen tomorrow, the Rapids would play Seattle, correct?
Correct. It would be third versus six.
So that's the most likely permutation, although, boy, so I guess there's a possibility for Salt Lake and Seattle to flip spots. There's a possibility for LAFC to drop as low as fourth. So basically, and the highest the Rapids could move is fifth, which would mean they'd wind up with the fourth place, so, which doesn't really matter that much. I don't know. I'll say this one thing really quickly, having looked at the table right now. It's kind of disappointing that there's no in or out of the playoffs drama this year at all in either conference. There's no way for anyone to get into the Eastern Conference final who's not already in, and there's no way for anybody to get out who's and that's kind of a bummer, because that's always fun drama. So let's see. Who would I want to face in the playoffs? Well, I don't want to face LAFC in the first round.
No. So want none of that smoke.
So you don't want to drop to eighth, right? But the other problem with dropping to eighth is you have another game, right? You have to play the nine team because you're now the wild card, which
It'd be LA Galaxy right now, Mark. I think there's a small chance LAFC would have to win out and Galaxy would have to lose. And I think there's another tiebreaker that would have to flip in there. It's most likely going to be LA Galaxy get the one seed. So the wild card is probably playing the Galaxy. But yes, in any case, I don't think you want the Galaxy either, Mark. So
no, you don't want the Galaxy. You really ideally don't want LAFC. You'd prefer, you just basically, if you're the Rapids, you need to be honest, you need to play for a draw against Austin so that you don't drop too far. Although I think there's a world where Minnesota wins and Colorado draws and we drop down a spot and then we have to play LAFC or Galaxy. Correct. So maybe you play for a win. I don't know. I don't think the Rapids ever go into a game saying things like we need to play for a draw. So whatever. I think that the first round opponent that would be most interesting is Salt Lake, because we would all be so amped up for that. And, you know, the hardcore fans, you know, it's we know each other so well. I think it would also make for good television. I think a lot of people would want to watch that series, especially if the game went to three games and some of the other series wrapped up after two. People would want to see that final game. So I don't know. My thoughts.
So here's my calculus on this, Mark. I think that if we just compare the result on Saturday, I think that's probably Seattle's ceiling. Unless Raul Diaz comes back and there's no indication that he's close or that he would start over and be 90 minutes fit to start over Jordan Morris, to move Jordan Morris to the wing, that's probably the best version of Seattle. I think, Mark, we can agree 90 minutes of Cole Bassett changes that game on Saturday. 90 minutes or even 60 minutes of Kevin Cabral with then Jonathan Lewis subbing in for the final 20 minutes or 30 minutes, that changes that game as well. So the Rapids have more of a ceiling to grow by getting rested and by getting healthy than I think Seattle does. I agree with you that the interesting one from a neutral's perspective, you always want a rivalry game in a playoff scenario. So then you just watch it and then watch the MLS chaos ensue. I suppose there would be maybe some value in their marker. Both teams could see some value in the notion that rivalries exist in their own ecosystem. So then fatigue and what had happened previously and form going into the playoffs was thrown out the window, specifically because of the head-to-head matchup. Where you don't want RSL, Mark, is in the supporters banter of Rapids fans finally being able to say that they won the Rocky Mountain Cup and got it back. Then if you follow that up by losing to RSL in the playoffs, then RSL will always be able to say, yeah, but we beat you in the first ever playoff meeting between Colorado and RSL. I don't know, Mark. I don't think in the charter for the Rocky Mountain Cup playoffs would count. So I do not think, unless the gang of nine, whatever it is, were to vote on this, would be a good question for Dave Wagner or Jason Maxwell of does the Rocky Mountain Cup come back up for competition because it's a three-game series and the teams playing each other? I don't think that's the scenario. I think Colorado has it until the Rocky Mountain Cup is decided during the regular season in 2025. But yeah, the Rocky Mountain Cup would be the one with the most juice, Mark, from a matchup standpoint. It would also be the one that you absolutely hate and dread entirely watching it until it's concluded, and then you only enjoy it after the fact if the Rapids win. It would be type 2 fun, or it would just be miserable during and then a horrible memory afterwards if you end up losing. So we'll see what happens. We will have a better idea of what that looks like, listeners, next week when we look at decision day and everybody only has one match to play. Mark, let's briefly touch on Austin. They fired Josh Wolf, for me, probably 12 months later than they should have. They're already out of the playoffs. They're not going to make the playoffs. Diego Rubio has been starting up top in the number 9 role. I could not think of what could be a better way for Diego Rubio to end his season with Austin than to dunk on the Rapids, score on them, and put them in even a worse situation going into the playoffs. At the same time, it's decision day. They have nothing left to play for. Does the interim manager come in and just say, we're going to completely rotate the squad, play all the kids, you know, who cares? Like, does he do... We've seen Rapids managers do that on the final match day where it's just play all the homegrowns and the team ends up losing, but it ends up being a good experience for them. So I don't think there's a new coach bump to be had here when Austin's already out of the playoffs and there's only one game left to play and it's a dead rubber from their standpoint. The only thing for me that's concerning is it Diego Rubio starting up top and getting his revenge game? Mark, what do you see just very quickly on decision day in Austin?
Rodrigo Rios is their interim coach. I've never heard of him. I have no idea what he is. Do you rotate? Is there a point to rotating? Remember, we've talked about this in the past, the challenge of rotating and putting in youngsters and scrubs is that you've got a lot of players that will be auditioning for jobs, and maybe this last match is an opportunity for them to do stuff. So you want to kind of give them opportunities. But yeah, there's a lot of high flying. I mean, the joke that was dropped, I think last season at the beginning of the season, or maybe it was the beginning of this season, I don't remember when they acquired these guys, was that they went out and signed Diego Rubio and Jossi Zardes. And so this was Austin deciding that the solution to all their problems was running it back, like they were the 2017 Colorado Rapids or whatever it was. And that was like 2022. Matt says 2022. Thanks, Matt. And so you're looking down this roster and you're looking at guys and saying, like, how many of these guys, you know, it's the joke about law school. Look to your left, look to your right. One of these people will not be here next year at this time, you know, like, and that's, I think, what you're looking at with Austin, which is they're going to be doing a massive rebuild. How many of these older players are going to be around for the rebuild? How many of these foreign players who they tried and didn't hit on? I think the other question with Austin, since they're hypothetically a big money, big time franchise, or at least they talked about it, is, you know, if you're going to drop a guy like Driussi or Ring and reboot with a foreign, you know, high expensive player. So I also, looking at that lineup, Matt, I don't see a lot of play your kids options there. There's not a lot of homegrown American kids on their roster, which is a whole nother problem that a number of teams in the league have, which is like one of the cool things about being a Colorado Rapids fan is we would do a terrible job on hitting on international players, and then there would be a couple of young guys to come up. You know, I remember that year when I think it was 2017, which was Cole Bassett's first. It was 2017. Cole Bassett's first year when he started at the back end of the season, and that was a disaster of a season. And Cole Bassett got a couple of games at the end, and it was kind of fun, and I was excited, and it was like, yay, we've got something to play for. Like, imagine being a fan of a team who doesn't have that. Like, there's nothing to look forward to. Portland, historically, has had a terrible academy. Austin, because they're a newish team. Cincinnati, I don't think, has really kind of done much with the academy yet.
Minnesota straight up not running their academy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, farming it out to the local club teams.
Gavalt. There's swaths of America. DC had a long run with producing almost nothing, but they're kind of turning it around. I don't think NYCFC has really produced much. But anyways, those are a couple teams where, like, there's no there's no hope down in the farm and there's no play your kids movement. So I think Austin's in that boat, and I think that's kind of a bummer.
I'll put it this way, Mark. If Cole Bassett starts and if Kevin Cabral comes off the bench and plays at least 30 minutes, I think the Colorado Rapids absolutely win in Austin. And in that situation, Mark, I think if they do that, they can only finish fifth or sixth in that scenario. So we'll see what happens. We will wait until we get injury reports from coming out of Rapids training next week, and we wait till after that Vancouver LAFC game, which will then make discussing the seeding scenarios much, much easier. But Mark, anything else we want to say, or shall we get out of here?
I am looking forward to getting to bed before the next 72 hours, which are going to be a long work day for me all in one. But why should I complain? I'll probably actually go upstairs and fall asleep watching the Dodgers lose 10-0 to the Padres.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter on X at @Sucker_Rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96 Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHCHL. We're also on Facebook and Blue Sky. Might have an inactive Instagram account. I can't remember. Mark, we need to hire a free social media intern.
Yeah, right.
With all that money we're getting on the Patreon. On our Substack. Speaking of which, check out Mark's written work on the Rapids at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can become a paid Highliner. We've got some merch still hanging out around there if you want a t-shirt, stickers, stuff like that. And email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Listeners, enjoy your international break. Enjoy your free weekend before we return for decision day and for the playoffs. Good luck to Zach Steffen with the Nats, and we will see you next week to preview D-Day 2024.
Peace.